I'm JP Tuesday.
And I'm Kiki Cannon. We've been Disney fans our entire lives. And now, as childless adults, we're undertaking a journey through the media that shaped our lives.
Trying to find out if what made them special is still there.
We are Rewatching the Magic.
Hi, Kiki.
Hi, Tuesday.
We are still in Talk Like a Pirate Month.
Avast there, me hearty. We're having a party. It's Talk Like a Pirate
Month.
Yo-ho!
I had a good Talk Like a Pirate Day. Did you have a good Talk Like a Pirate Day?
It was all right.
I mean, we couldn't really go out in our piratey best or anything, because the world is still messed up, but, you know, it was fun.
As long as you're filling your own house with R's and mateys, the deed was done.
Yeah.
So,
hope everybody had a good one.
And, you know, now when you say Disney pirate, more people are thinking about Jack Sparrow. And that's fine. There's nothing wrong with it. As we talked last week, Pirates of the Caribbean is still a great film.
We loved it.
Yeah. But before all of that, when you thought Disney pirate, there was really only one name that came up. That be Captain Hook. So we are going second star to the right, straight on till morning. And we're talking about Peter Pan, the Disney 1953 animated feature. And this is our first step into what many would consider a classic Disney. We have talked about 101 Dalmatians, and Walt was alive for that, but at that point he was already hands off the animation.
Yeah, he was more into television at that point.
Yeah, television, live action. He was really focusing on the parks. And that was also during that Xerox era. So this was prime Disney animation. That clean, crisp animation that many people associate with the classic Disney era. Most people will consider this Silver Age because, again, the war had ended. And during the war, and eventually we will get to those World War II cartoons. Those are episodes by themselves. Because they were doing mostly package films for World War II, because, you know, they didn't really have a lot of supplies to use. So once the war was over and they were able to make movies that they, on the level that they wanted to make it, they went back to what they were known for, and that was the classic fairy tales. You know, they did Cinderella, and then they did here, Peter Pan.
Peter Pan is kind of notable for several reasons, but really primarily two reasons. The first one being that this was like Walt's dream project. Started with Snow White, yes, but this was what he intended to be the follow-up. This was the movie he really wanted to do. He loved the story of Peter Pan, and this was his dream. He wants to do Peter Pan. But the animation technology just wasn't there to do some of the flying sequences and render some of the things in the way he wanted.
Especially, he had
to wait.
The pixie dust effects, especially.
Yeah, the pixie dust effects and stuff. It just wasn't there. They didn't know how to do that yet. There was still a lot of ground to break.
This was, I believe this is actually one of, there's a theory that Walt kind of put a hint of Peter Pan happening in an earlier movie, because in Pinocchio, you see Jiminy Cricket, and he's been in front of several books. Two of those books are Alice in Wonderland and Peter Pan, implying that he already had plans for these movies all the way back then.
Yeah, well, I mean, Disney historians have been very clear on the fact that this was the film Walt wanted to do after Snow White. You know, let's break ground with Snow White, see if we can do it. If we can do it, then let's do the movie I really want to do. The problem was not only the not only the technology, which was one of the big problems, but the other problem was that somebody else had the rights at the time.
Mm. Yeah, Peter Pan, not nowadays, I would consider Peter Pan public domain, definitely. But back then, yeah. Yeah, it was the ownership was to the very children's hospital that Sir James Bury gave the rights to when he passed away. The rights to Peter Pan went to this children's hospital. So you had to go to this children's hospital and pretty much state your case that you wanted to do a Peter Pan movie.
Yeah, and the interesting thing is that they had the animation rights. Disney bought the animation rights shortly after, about 4 years later, after Snow White came out. Mm-hmm. They finally had the clout and the money to win the bidding war. Fleischer also wanted it to the, you know, the other big, one of the other big animation studios at the time. Max Fleischer Studios. They wanted to do Peter Pan as well, and Disney just did what Disney does now and threw more money at it and outbid them. The other, I mentioned this was notable for kind of two big reasons. One being Walt's dream project, the other being that this ended up being the last film that the fabled nine old men all worked on.
Mm. This is also the last movie that Disney used RKO as a distributor. RK who?
What's yeah, a radio picture? Yeah. Yeah, they did not have their own distributor at that point. They were still working with other companies. It's kind of weird to think back on Disney as anything other than the giant behemoth that it is now.
Yeah, then they started Buena Vista Pictures not long after, and then eventually became Walt Disney Pictures.
Yeah. So I think that, of course, everybody thinks of this as one of the seminal movies, of course, in creating modern Disney as we know it. I mean, Tinkerbell still flies over the Disney castle.
Yeah.
You know? At the really, start of pretty much every movie.
It's Pinocchio, Cinderella, and Peter Pan in that opening logo.
Yeah.
Because you have Pinocchio Pinocchio, when you push upon the store, the castle is Cinderella's castle. And you have Tinkerbell going over it.
Yeah, those three movies really became the cornerstone of early Disney. I know it started with Snow White, and we still do think of Snow White with Disney. But if I tell you to think of an old school Disney princess, you're going to think Cinderella before you think Snow White. I think for most people. I know how I do. You're going to think of Peter Pan and Tinkerbell. You're going to think of Pinocchio and When You Wish Upon a Star, especially. You know, that's become like the Disney theme song. So those three films are kind of like the trifecta that really established what we think of as the Walt Disney Empire, I think. Mm-hmm. It started with the mouse, but for some reason other than the ears, like when you watch a Disney film, you don't see the ears.
No.
You see bits of those other three films. So it's obvious that all three of those had kind of a place in the hearts of either Walt or whoever put that together.
Yeah.
But let's get back to this film. They had to wait until 1953 to make it. But this one is kind of based on the play that J.M. Barrie wrote.
When you look at when the movie starts, it specifically says based on the play, not based off the book. Yes, this was a play first, before it ever was a book. But when most people say Peter Pan, they mostly think of the novel.
Yeah, Peter and Wendy, is the novel that really tells this same story, and strangely was not the first thing Peter Pan showed up in as a creation. Barry had used him earlier in a novel called The Little White Bird. And then it moved on later to be a stage play called Peter Pan or The Boy Who Wouldn't Grow Up. And then that got expanded into a novel a few years later called Peter and Wendy.
There is a longstanding rumor, which isn't true, that that Sir James Barry created the name Wendy specifically for the story, since apparently no one had heard the name beforehand. This isn't true.
Yeah, no. There are people who have created what are now common names in fiction, but that one is a myth. Yeah.
Yeah. What I've known, we mentioned this. I did mention it before, but there is something that you don't normally see in these adaptations, in that there's a big thank you to the Hospital for Sick Children for giving them the rights to the movie. None of the past or anything after that had ever, Disney never gave that kind of credit for it. You think that's part, well, that was part of the deal?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that it was like in the contract. You have to mention that we own the rights, because that's probably how they got most of their money.
Is
owning Peter Pan and
whatever
donations, you know. This is another Disney musical. Got a lot of music in it.
Mm-hmm.
Including You Can Fly is probably the big one from this one that is still used a lot around the parks.
Mm-hmm.
If you're walking through the parks, you will hear that in the mix of music that plays at certain points, especially in the Magic Kingdom.
Mm-hmm.
But some of the other songs not really as well known.
Yeah.
The song about the mother is one that, like, every time I hear it, I go like, oh yeah, that is in this, isn't it?
The Pirate's Life song, the Captain Hook song.
Yeah, Pirate's Life you can sometimes hear as well in other things, gets referenced, but strangely, the Yo-Ho, Yo-Ho, Pirate's Life for me, from the ride, from the Pirates of the Caribbean ride, is the more well-known pirate song from Disney.
There's also Never Smile at a Crocodile, which the lyrics are never used in the movie. There are lyrics to that song. That would be the song that the crocodile, the place when the crocodile shows up. Doom, 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 doom.
Yeah.
And that has been used in the Electric Water Pageant in Florida. That would be the precursor to the Main Street Electrical Parade. That would be little floats of little neon-colored animals, and there's an alligator, and they play Never Smile at a Crocodile for it, even though it's an alligator, not a crocodile. Okay.
Yeah, I never really understood why that. I don't know if, like, did Barry just not know the difference, or I don't know. there's a... I live pretty close to alligator country, so... The movie starts off with Second Star to the Right.
Yep.
Which is not sung by anybody in the movie, but is sung by the Mellow Men, which we've talked about one of their members frequently, Thurl Ravenscroft.
Yep.
We've talked about him a lot.
Yeah, the Mellow Men, they're known. They sing Yo-Ho, Yo-Ho, the Pirates of the Caribbean ride. They sing the Tiki Room song for the Tiki Room. pretty much most of the songs from the older Disney rides were sung by them.
Yeah, the OG Disney rides, they're kind of all over that.
Haunted Mansion, especially.
Mm.
Their faces are actually seen in the Haunted Mansion. The busts that are broken, those are, contrary to popular belief, it is not Walt Disney's head. It is Thel Ravenscroft's head.
Yeah. So we're going to get to the one song that we're not talking about a little later. Don't think we've forgotten. We're going to get there.
When you start this movie, there is a warning for tobacco use, and I get that. But yeah, there should be another warning in this movie.
There should be about 17 warnings for this movie. Let's talk a little bit about the cast while while we're here. Peter Pan, played by Bobby Driscoll. He was a child actor. He had a history with Disney by this point, including being in Song of the South and Treasure Island. He had done before this. He was both the animation model and the voice for Peter Pan. Unfortunately, he may have been the first Disney child to come to a bad end. He unfortunately had that typical, what you think of as the Hollywood child star. He got into drugs, had some problems with the law, and ended up passing away at the age of 31.
It's too young. It's a shame.
Yeah. And apparently his substance abuse had something to do with that early death. So, unfortunately, his life after Disney did not go so well, but, he, you know, he lives on, and that's sometimes the best any of us could hope for.
Mm-hmm.
We have Catherine Beaumont as Wendy.
Mm-hmm.
She, as well as Bobby Driscoll, have been both named Disney legends for their part in this movie. But she was also Alice in the Alice in Wonderland film. You talked about Alice in Wonderland and Peter Pan being the two books on that shelf. She was in both of them.
The irony is that at the parts, the person that plays Wendy also plays Alice.
Well, that's probably why.
They do have similar voices. I mean, let's be honest. Those two characters do have similar voices.
Well, same actress.
Same actor, yeah. But kudos to them
pretty
for
much
actually
the same voice. Yeah.
Kudos to them for getting a British actress to play a British character.
Yeah, she was in fact English, born in London. She is still with us as of this recording. She is 82 as we are recording this. So good for her. Good for you, Catherine Beaumont. May you have many more years.
Yeah, she was still voicing Alice for a couple of the Disney parks and some of the VHS princess videos. So she was I don't know if she still is voicing Alice. Probably not. But she was still active for a very long time.
Yeah, let's talk about our big villain here. We've got Hans Conried as Captain Hook. And also George Darling.
Which comes from the play.
Yeah. The play has a few of the actors from the real world show up as characters in the Neverland for the children.
That definitely feels very Wizard of Oz. I assume Wizard of Oz took that from Peter Pan.
The film version. That's not in the book version. Yeah. You also, if you're a lover of cartoons as we are, you also know him as the voice of Snidely Whiplash in the Dudley Do Right cartoons.
For me, Hans Conried plays a different character, a different Disney character that is dear to my heart. When Walt would do the Disneyland TV show, occasionally he would have the magic mirror from Snow White show up. Hans Conried, in makeup, would play the magic mirror in a very snarky voice, which to me is a much better representation of that character than from the original Snow White movie.
Yeah, that is true. I have forgotten that that was him. Yeah, I do remember those things. But yeah, so you know his voice, whether or not from Peter Pan or anything else, really.
It's the same voice.
Yeah. He's also, once again, if you're an animation fan like we are, apparently his voice was the inspiration for the voice of the robot devil in Futurama. Which the actor is doing an impression of Hans Conried, which I love. I just love little things like that.
From a perspective of a kid, if you have a father, the way the father acts in this movie, in your little fantasies, he would be the bad guy.
Yeah. And then kind of the last of the actors we're going to talk about, we've got Bill Thompson as Mr. Smee.
Smee.
Yeah, and Bill Thompson was kind of known for two other major things, which is that he was on a radio series called Fibber McGee and Molly, which was really big in the 30s through to the 50s. And we, though, probably remember him better as the voice of Droopy.
You knew what? I'm happy.
And what's so funny is I had forgotten that he was also the voice of Droopy. And when I was rewatching the film, I was like, why does Smee sound like if Droopy tried to do a British accent? And then I'm
he
like,
he sounds like Droopy on helium.
Yeah, that's why. It's because it is Droopy trying to do a British accent. So, that's where the voice of Mr. Smee comes from. Just so you know, we've talked about on the show before, June Foray, probably the greatest female voice actor in the history of ever. She is all of the mermaids that make fun of Wendy in The Mermaid Cove. So, yeah, there's her talent, that she is all three of those characters.
Her and Mel Blanc.
Yeah.
Yep. So, yeah, great voice cast for this movie.
Let's get into the story.
Yeah.
You know the story. It's Peter Pan. Everybody knows the story of Peter Pan.
One thing that this does change, that at least the versions of Peter Pan that I'm used to, is that they make it known that Peter Pan is a well-known figure in this world. As the mother is familiar with Peter Pan and believes him to be the spirit of youth, the father is somewhat familiar with Peter Pan and thinks it's nonsense. The kids know of Peter Pan and make up adventures in their room of the character, where, at least in the original story, at least the versions that I'm aware of, it's just regular children's stories that they're telling each other, that the mother tells them. So it's very odd to have Peter Pan being a known entity in this world.
Yeah, he's almost like what we would think of as like a tooth fairy kind of character. Like all children just seem to know about him or something.
Yeah,
but the film does start with a reason why that may be.
Like, this has happened before and it will happen again. Like this isn't the first time Peter has gone to the real world and has taken children to Neverland.
All this has happened before, and all this will happen again. And if you're now worried that the Cylons are coming for your planet, there's a reason why. They took that line from this film. Turns out Ronald D. Moore was a big fan of this film, as are apparently all men who get to, like, be in entertainment. Anyway, we'll get into that in a bit. But Ronald D. Moore was a big fan of this movie, and he took that line to also start the reboot of Battlestar Galactica. So if you're a Battlestar Galactica fan and you watch this movie and you're not expecting that to come, as I did not remember that was there, and then you start going like, wait a minute, are we about to be attacked by robots? I had a Peter very
Pan
weird
is a Cylon,
moment.
Confirmed.
Yeah, I was watching this movie in the middle of what was left of a hurricane, and it's like, it was really weird. Forgive the dog. He's interjecting his thoughts.
He's being a dog.
He's being a dog. Forgive the dog. He is a dog.
Well, there's a dog in this movie.
I once had a neighbor knock on my door and ask me why my dog was barking. And since the neighbor had woken me up, I was half asleep and feeling not ready for this. And I just said, because he's a dog. If he were a cat, I'd be worried. So, anyway, yeah, there is a dog in this movie, and I love this dog. Nana!
Nana the dog. The housemaid, the house nurse. What?
The family... the nursemaid dog.
Yeah, they have a dog for a nursemaid. Children. Yeah. A very intelligent dog, but still, your nanny's a dog.
I wish I could train my dog to do half this stuff. I want my dog to bring me my medicine and tuck me in bed at night.
And pull all your toys away.
And put all my toys away. I think it's fascinating how much early Disney movies think dogs can do.
It like, is also, yeah.
We talked about that in 101 Dalmatians, how Pogo in that is just like taking care of the human.
Yeah.
He's moving clocks and bringing him his pipe and all that other kind of stuff. So I was like, oh wow, the dog knows how to read apparently.
Yeah, cuz she rearranges the blocks so they're in alphabetical order. So she is aware of that.
And maybe she can't like read as far as comprehension, but she at least knows alphabetical order for blocks. But this movie starts out with the world's just douchiest father. I'm sorry.
Which again explains why in their stories Captain Hook sounds like their father.
Yeah, I guess, but it just I'm just gonna go ahead and say it. I'm gonna start right out. I'm sorry, I've been nice about this movie for too long already. Every guy in this movie is awful. In some way. Like maybe not the two darling boys. John and Michael are kinda okay ish. John's got some problems. We'll see that later when he comes across a certain group of people.
Yeah.
But like Wendy and her mother are the only redeemable characters in this film really that get any lines.
I mean,
everybody you're not wrong. Awful.
You're not wrong. Even Tinkerbell has her jealousy.
Yeah, I kind of leave Tiger Lily out of it because she doesn't really do anything.
Tiger Lily does nothing wrong. Yes, she doesn't even have a single...
She has no personality. It's just she's just there. You can't say that she's good or bad in any specific way as a person because she doesn't do enough, but she has no agency in the film. She's just a static character, so we can't really say anything about her, but like every other character we see is awful in some way.
There is a joke that I forgot was in this movie that had me legitimately laughing out loud. And it's an old gag, but I did not expect it here. Is the father trips over the toys and falls while trying to avoid tripping over the dog. And he's falling over and all the toys are landing on him and he's obviously in some sort of pain. And all the family's rushing to him and he's accepting, oh, my family's going to love me. And they completely pass by him saying, oh, Nana, are you okay?
Well, it's, you know, it's his gag. Fault.
Yeah.
It's his fault. I mean, it's like, if someone is screaming and throwing things and they hit somebody else and also themselves, you're going to go to the person that was completely innocent first, right? I mean, come on. Like, that person was just standing there doing nothing. And in that case, this is the dog. The dog was just standing there doing nothing, trying to be, you know, a good puppy. And the father is just being awful.
Yeah.
I mean, also, why are you storing your shirts, your formal shirts, in the kids' room?
I don't think
that's on you, dude.
I think it's just the kids took them. Like, the cufflinks are he's looking for all the shirts in his room. He's looking for his cufflinks in his room. And the kids took the shirt and made it the treasure map. The kids took the cufflinks and asked to bury treasure.
I don't know. I don't know. It's just everything about this guy is wrong to me. It's like, you wouldn't have fallen over if you weren't stomping around, screaming, breaking things.
Yeah.
Like, just stand still for a second. Stop screaming. Apparently that chalk wipes off perfectly and doesn't leave a mark.
It's a cartoon.
So, hush, you know? Like,
yeah, he's very, very... just the opposite of fun. Whatever the opposite of fun is, that's what his father is. Like, he doesn't like the fact that his eldest daughter is still... telling stories, children's stories, and you're going to move out of the nursery into your own room. You're not going to sleep in the kids' room anymore. We're going to take the dog out.
And everybody's so upset about this. Like, no, you're punishing her with her own room. Like, everybody I know who has siblings would kill for their own room.
But I think it comes to the point of those three have never been apart, so this is coming really suddenly. It's like, she's never made, it's assumed that she's never made any indication of wanting her own room. She likes the idea of being in the same room with her brothers, and she tells them the stories just like her mom tells the stories. And I think it's more of the boys, like, they don't want to be apart from their sister. At least that's how I understood it. Maybe I'm getting something different from the movie.
Yeah, according to what I found, apparently Wendy is supposed to be 12 at this point. So she's just on the cusp of puberty.
She should have her own room.
She's
about to
hit that stage. The boys are supposedly 8, and I'm not sure how old Michael is supposed to be. Like, 4, maybe? Mm-hmm. He's very much kind of like a kindergartner. Mm-hmm. Tops. John seems much, much older because he speaks at about the same age level as Wendy does. But he's apparently supposed to be 8. No idea how old Peter would be in the real world, like, if he went back and let the normal flow of time. But he's probably 12 or 13.
Peter growing up is a different movie from a different studio.
Yeah. That I wish we were talking about right now, because it's less problematic than this. Yeah, so there's no telling in this story how long Peter has been stuck at his age. There is suggestions that both of the darling parents have had encounters with Peter before.
Yeah, like I said, the mother is at least familiar with Peter Pan. And at the end of the movie, we see that the father has seen Captain Hook's pirate ship before. He doesn't remember when, he gets to know that he's seen it somewhere before. So it's implied that these two went with Peter Pan at some point and then came back.
In most versions of this story, the Peter Pan stories almost seem to be a thing that is internal to the Darling family. That the Darlings know the stories of Peter Pan, but they maybe are not known to just everybody. It seems weird, though, as Peter does... I don't know if we want to say kidnap children, but it kind of does seem like he kidnaps children. Like,
well, he has the lost boys. The lost boys came from somewhere.
Yeah, I mean, different versions kind of tell different stories on how the lost boys ended up there. Like, you know, maybe it's a neglectful parent and the boy just slips away. Maybe it's stolen by fairies. Maybe it's, I don't know. We don't really know why the Lost Boys are there in this one or why Peter is there in this one. It just, they just exist. This movie is so full of sexism. This is just like sexism the movie, like Victorian era sexism the movie. I'm sorry. And I know it's in the original story. This is actually very faithful of an adaptation.
Yeah. I would say mostly it is a faithful adaptation. You have let's skip to Peter actually showing up in the Darling Children's room trying to find his shadow. Since that's where the sexism kind of starts with Tinkerbell checking herself out in the mirror and realizing that she be thick.
Yeah, she's like, uh-oh, thick thighs. And I'm like, why are you mad, though?
Exactly. Like, she starts out feeling good. Like, she's looking at herself almost like she's never seen herself in a mirror before. And she's kind of checking herself out. She's kind of pushing her hair up. She's, you know, going around her curves. Yeah. I was trying to find a non-pervy way to say that.
Yeah.
And then she gets to her hips.
It's kind of pervy for a kid's movie, though. I mean, Tinkerbell's outfit, first of all.
Yeah. She gets to her hips. She notices in the reflection in the mirror that her hips look really big. She kind of puts her hands on her hips and lifts them to her face to realize how big her booty is. Yeah. And the fact that kind of becomes a joke later in the same scene with her big booty being the reason she can't fit through a keyhole.
Yeah. And then we continue this reflection thing later in the flying scene as they're flying over water and Wendy starts looking at her own reflection in the river or lake or whatever and is like, oh, and then Tinkerbell comes and disturbs the surface of the water like, no, you don't get to admire yourself in the mirror.
Tinkerbell as a character herself is just insanely jealous. Like, she is the only female the only girl, the only non-man in Peter's group. And when there is another female, another girl in Wendy, she gets insanely jealous.
There is not a woman in this story who is not defined by their relationship with Peter.
Yeah.
I mean, the mother. That's kind of it. The dog.
Yeah.
But as far as like the main women we see, Wendy is kind of modeled by her relationship. She's kind of supposed to be our viewpoint character here. Mm-hmm. And none of the story is about her. She has like almost nothing to do in the story other than just kind of sew on the shadow and follow Peter around.
One thing they have cut from this version is the kiss. How, you know, in versions of the story, they'll give each other buttons and thimbles to represent the kiss. They completely skip over that in this version.
Yeah, she tries to give Peter a kiss.
And Tinkerbell interrupts.
Tinkerbell stops it. Like, no, get away from my man. Yeah. Tinkerbell is entirely framed by her jealousy over Peter. That's her only character trait the entire movie.
Yeah, like, Peter is hers. Granted,
Peter doesn't think he's hers. But
yeah, that's a completely different relationship, and it goes, I mean, there have been, it's something that happens in the real world of a person has feelings for another person that, and they kind of are very protective of them. You know, this is mine, get away. And the other person is like, what are you doing? I'm just talking to somebody. We're not a thing. I don't want to be a thing with you. We're friends, but mind your business.
Yeah, and then later when they meet the mermaids are really only mean to Wendy because Peter seems to... She's a girl that's near Peter.
Yeah, and the only... And this is barely the only female girl character that Peter shows any kind of affection towards is Tiger Lily. Because they're dancing and they're doing Eskimo kisses.
Yeah, he seems interested in Tiger Lily, and that's when Wendy plays the Tinkerbell role. She gets jealous, and how dare you?
Exactly. This is a boy that you've known for less than 12 hours, and it's already said in the movie that the natives and the Lost Boys they know each other. They're friends. They play war games with each other. So of course Peter would know Tiger Lily.
Yeah, I mean he knows her on sight. Like you know, that's who she is. We've got to go save her. There's so much to unpack about this movie. It's such nonsense, and it's not this movie. Like I don't want to blame Disney for this.
This is part. All in the original text.
Yeah. This is a problematic story from the get-go. I mean... There's only one word I could think of for Peter Pan watching this movie. And it's a word that I cannot say and keep our kind of...
PG-13 rating.
PG-13 rating that we try to do. But it ends with boy, and it starts with a four-letter word that begins with an F. Let's call him a coitus guy. Yeah, he's a coitus guy. He's probably the original coitus guy. Nope, that's a different thing. A playboy you can kind of... deal with. A coitus guy is a guy that you just, it's just a giant red flag and you should just run away from him as fast as you can. And honestly, I'm kind of thinking that if you're ever like, you know, if you're into guys and the guy that you're into goes like, yeah, I really like Peter Pan. I really feel like, you know, spiritually connected to him. I don't want to grow up either. Turn around and run. That is not the guy for you. Or anybody. You are not mature enough to be in a relationship if you are a guy going like, man, I wish I could be Peter Pan. Because, no. Peter Pan is not a hero. He's not a thing to aspire to. He's a toddler.
Yeah. There, it's one of the things, I've never watched the show Once Upon a Time, but I know people who have, and Peter Pan is actually a villain in that show, as the way they wrote the story is that he was a guy, he hated being an adult, and went to Neverland and turned himself young, forsaking his child, and in that world, I believe the child is actually Rumpelstiltskin. I remember if you have watched Once Upon a Time and want to correct me, I will take the correction. But to have Peter Pan being a villainous character who is very self-centered and selfish actually fits.
Well, the thing is that most modern versions of the Peter Pan story that I've seen are deconstructions that actually portray Peter Pan not as heroic. What is it in Shrek? He's trying to sell Tinkerbell to the authorities as a magical creature. You know, there's a couple of horror stories about Peter Pan being a kidnapper. There's a movie that was supposed to come out or be filmed this year and kind of got derailed. I hope they will eventually make it, called The Lost Girls, that is just about several generations of darling women. Like the movie says, all this has happened before, all this has happened again. Most versions have it be that the darling women are visited each generation by Peter Pan, and this movie would have gone into that as to like how it kind of messed them up psychologically and made them.
There was a movie released by Fox Searchlight Pictures called Wendy. That was sort of a modern.
Yeah, that was about a girl trying to be Peter Pan rather than follow him or get with him. She was like, no, 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 I'm going to be the one that never grows up. Yeah, that a lot of people like that. I have not seen it yet. But there have been a lot of deconstructions of this, and honestly, I think it's really the only way you can do it anymore. Because everything about this movie is so counter, in a way, to modern culture. I can see it being in the strict Victorian era, where everything was manners and, you know, men don't show feelings and men don't read stories like that and, you know, whatever. See why this would have been a thing of like, oh, I wish I could still have a creative hobby or show an emotion like I did when I was a child. I get that. But I really hope we've moved beyond that as a society, that like more, you know, boys growing up today feel like, you know, I can still grow up and like action figures and comic books and storybooks and show emotions and be vulnerable and whatever. Like, please, please, please let that be.
Apparently Lost Girls is on Netflix.
No, that's a different movie. That's a true crime story.
Oh, okay. Yep. I forget I said that.
But yeah, so I can see why at the time this was written, and maybe two previous generations of men, this was some sort of aspirational story. I wish I could regain my childhood. But honestly, I think most of the people of our age that I know, while we also hate adulting, because adulting is complete nonsense and we need to get rid of that concept. Like, you know, you're a man of that generation. You got action figures in your room.
Yep.
You do a podcast about Disney movies.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's like you have, you know, creative outlets. You play wrestling video games and I don't know. Did you ever personally feel like, oh, Peter Pan, I wish I could be a little boy and like in that same way, other than just adulting sucks?
Other than I wish I could fly and get to where I need to get to quicker. No.
Well, yeah, everybody wants to fly. Like, it's just, that's why I like Rogue. We talked about that before. Rogue is my favorite superhero because she can fly.
You're not wrong. You're not wrong. But again, everyone has that thing, especially of our generation. I think we were one of the last generations to go through that, is that, oh, you know, you're this age, you shouldn't like cartoons anymore, you shouldn't like toys anymore, you shouldn't like all this stuff anymore because you're growing up and that's kid stuff. And it's ours was a generation that says, no, why? We don't have to get rid of it. We don't have to. Yes, we have to go and get jobs and get our own lives, but we can still enjoy the things that were there when we were younger. We don't have to give them up. It's just we're not going to have a lot of time to do it.
Yeah, one of our, I just read one of our mutual friends, who's actually a little bit older than us, talking about how when he became an adult, he went, you know what, I'm going to buy all the toys my parents told me I couldn't have when I was a kid. I'm going to do all the things that, like, we don't have money for that, or we didn't, you know, like, I got a little bit of money now. If I want to go have ice cream for breakfast, I'm going to go have ice cream for breakfast. You know, it's not, maybe don't do it every day. It's not a healthy thing to do. And as an adult, I recognize that. But, like, yeah, I can do it now and then. You know, I can have that, you know, Lego set that I couldn't have when I was a kid because we were too poor. Mm-hmm. You know, I can, and I've been doing that myself, you know. And I think you're right that our generation kind of went like, no, we will be the generation that will be like adults who are still going to the Disney parks because we want to, yeah. Not because our kids want to. I mean, you know, our kids can come too if they want. That's fine. Yeah. But, you know, we'll like it just as much as a kid will. Mm-hmm. You know, I can watch Steven Universe at age 40, you know, it's fine. But I kind of wonder if our generation needs Peter Pan anymore. At all. Like, as a figure.
I don't think so. Again, Peter Pan, like you said, Peter Pan was a representation of old world thinking of the world. I don't like being an adult. I want to go back to being a kid. And they don't, society at the time just, just really discriminate against that. You know, you're an adult. You shouldn't like kid stuff. And we don't really, the story, I don't think we really do need Peter Pan as an active character. Again, it's a classic character, and it's always going to be around, and that book is always going to be read by someone somewhere. But as a modern character, in the modern world, it's redundant, because, again, our generation were the ones that said no. We can grow up, but we can still love this stuff that we knew, that we loved as children.
And I hope we can preserve that for the generations who come after us.
We were the generation, and I'm not saying that we were the first, but we were as a collective generation. Because there are still Gen Xers and that first, you know, pushed the childhood away and were trying to get that back later in life. You know, but we were the one that's a collective generation that said, you know, we're not going to lose our childlike wonder of the world. We may be hardened from, you know, losing childhood innocence, but we're not going to lose the wonders that we had as children as of what the world is and what the world could be. Look at what really the Gen Z kids are doing. And I mean, and I can't really say them as kids because they're 20-year-olds, but they're, you know, pushing forward with, we need to do this, this, and this. You know, they're the ones that are organizing the protests. They're the ones that are organizing people to vote. They're out there. They're changing the world to become a better place, while mostly, you know, baby boomers and some Gen Xers are saying, no, this is how the world works, and you need to stop thinking like a child.
Yeah, and I think that the reason I'm so harsh on this movie and Peter Pan in general is I think the story of Peter Pan hits different if you were raised, you know, if you're assigned female at birth, if you're acculturated as a female as a child. And so growing up as a little girl, you watch like Wendy and it's like, what's the thing that I got from Wendy? Like, okay, sweetheart, go ahead and have like an adventure, because once you hit 13, you are a woman, you are the mom.
Yeah,
because that's the entire thing, is like John and Michael are like, we might go back someday, and Wendy's like, no, I think I'm done, I'm ready to accept my fate as a woman.
Yeah, I'm going to grow up tomorrow. That's one of the lines she specifically says in the movie, that she's going to grow up tomorrow.
Like, yeah, today tomorrow I will have my my own room. I will be a woman. I will, you know, I will do womanly things. I will sew, and I will get prepared for marriage to an awful person like my father. Like, you feel really bad for Wendy's mom.
Although there are some versions of the story where it's, you know, Toodles, the boss boy, went back and they ended up together.
Yeah, there are some where Wendy ended up, you know, Toodles decides that he wants to grow up and comes back with Wendy and she ends up marrying him. That's in some versions of the story. And in fact, was Perry's.
Yeah, it's hinted at in Hook, but they never straight out say that they were married.
Well, yeah, Barry originally put that in the story and then deleted it before it was published. Like, it was his original intention that Toodles was going to come back and eventually marry Wendy. We only see what he left in was that Wendy eventually gets married, has a daughter, and Peter comes back for her daughter.
Although I must say that none of the Lost Boys are named in this version, in the Disney version.
Yeah, they're just the Lost Boys as a collective. They never get names, and they barely have
personalities. Other than the twins who repeat each other. That's the
supposedly
personality.
Toodles is the one in the skunk costume. Like, apparently they had names kind of internally, but they're never said in the film. Mm. But they're all dressed in animal costumes, which is, this is the only time I really think I ever see that as a Lost Boys thing. All the Lost Boys are wearing.
I think animals. It's more of a modern thing, but they do look like the onesies most adults would wear to go to sleep.
Yeah. Well, adults of our generation, like, that looks like an adorable bunny onesie. I want that. I've had those. It's fine. But they,
I guess I can blame this movie for that.
Well, I don't know. Maybe. but there's something about the Lost Boys in this version that I don't really get in the other versions, which is that they are incredibly violent in the Disney version.
Yeah.
The only thing they do is fight with each other.
And, well, the first time we see them, it's Tink that flies in and starts a fight between the Lost Boys. Like, they're just sleeping. And Tink comes in there. They're just sleeping, and Tink comes in there and starts them fighting each other. And then tells them, oh, you need to shoot down the Wendy bird.
Yeah, she tries to kill Wendy so many times in this movie.
Well, because Wendy is after her man. Again,
Tinkerbell is straight up homicidal in this film.
Yeah. What's the term? There is, I don't know, I know there's an anime term for that. Sundre, I think it is called.
I'm not really an anime person, so I can't tell you, but yeah, she's definitely trying to get the other woman killed. But
insanely jealous. Just that's her thing. Like, Peter is my man, and any other woman that comes near her is my enemy. She is the ultimate toxic girlfriend, I guess.
Yeah, except not really a girlfriend, probably. Like, we never really get the idea that Peter sees her in that way. But the Lost Boys in this are incredibly violent in a way. I mean, they fight in other versions of the story. I'm not saying they don't. You know, they fight pirates and they've... But, like, every single time, like, one of them will, you know, get hit on the head with a falling object and they'll turn around and punch the boy next to him. You know, it's like, stop. Like, what are you doing?
Because, again, another old world of boys are not allowed to show emotion other than rage.
Yeah, and anger or violence are the only emotions that were allowed. But we get there and you're like, oh, well, maybe John more than Michael, because Michael is like a really tiny child. Mm-hmm. But maybe John will be like a good influence on them. You know, he seems like a proper young man who knows how to not beat things up outside of playtime, you know.
I want to fight some Indians!
Yep, and then that's immediately, it's like, hi kids, let me teach you about racism. I'm now, British. Yes,
I will respond and say that's not my belief, but that is literally what John says in the film.
You were quoting the film there, yeah.
Yes.
It is hard to talk about this movie without sounding extremely racist just because of what happens in this film.
Yeah, they say that's what we were saying before, or I was saying before, that there needs to be a outdated cultural references in some of Disney's older movies do have that, but this one needs it. And
I don't know why not, because this is one of the more egregious ones. Yeah. It is horrible red-faced version, you know, caricatures of Native people. And the thing that makes it worse is that they're not just kind of like, sort, not that this would really be better, but they're not like fantasy natives from, you know, fantasy land or whatever. They use terms, like they use like Algonquin. It's a, they use the names of like real people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they use real tribal affiliations in referring to these people. And of course, I'm not entirely sure they used them accurately because they didn't get anything else accurate in this movie. And then John immediately is just like, I want to meet them, is the first thing he says. Like, that's where he wants to go first. He sees the native village and he's like, let's go there. And you're thinking like, oh, he's interested in them. He wants to talk to them, learn about them. No, he wants to fight them.
Yeah.
He wants to teach the Lost Boys how to fight the savages, his word. He talks about how they are not intelligent, but that they are easy to sneak up on. And, you know, the movie kind of plays with this because the natives are the ones that get the drop on the Lost Boys, you know, as John is kind of pontificating about, like, oh, yeah. I know all about them and how easy it will be to defeat them. They're captured. Which is kind of, you know, okay, that's kind of a one-up. And then they get to the song that we didn't talk about earlier.
Yeah, yeah. Well, let's just pull the Band-Aid off right now and talk about it. What makes the red man red? So, yeah, this is after they saved Tiger Lily, and that was kind of the whole point of them getting captured. Oh, well, oh, yeah, you won this round, so let's go, and we'll have another round tomorrow. No, Tiger Lily has been kidnapped, and if she doesn't show up, we're going to kill you. So Peter saves Tiger Lily, and, yeah, let's just go straight to what makes the red man red. Oh, boy.
Yeah, we talked about another Disney song that had to... The ones that, you know, there's the song in Pocahontas about savages, but that was written in a very knowing term. We're supposed to dislike the English people that are singing these stereotypes. Mm-hmm. But in this movie, it comes from the natives themselves. Mm. This one has a lot of, you know... Like, why do they always say how? Why do they smoke the peace pipe? Why do they say ugh? Which is, like, not... You know, all of those were stereotypes anyway, you know?
Yeah.
And they give really stereotypical insulting answers, too. Like, he says how because he has so much to learn. So he's constantly wanting to learn. It's like... There is a somewhat apocryphal story of why the white people, you know, the stereotype of how came up. And I've always heard, and like I said, it's probably apocryphal, that the settlers were trying to figure out how the natives were living off the land. You know, how do you farm that? How do you make that type of boat? How do you whatever? And so the natives just thought that was their word for hello, because the first thing they would ask would be, how do you do this? How do you do that? Probably not the way it happened, you know, linguistically, probably not how it happened. But, you know, but the ending to the big question is probably the most problematic part of this, which is the question of, like, why is their skin red? And the answer is because they're always chasing women, and so they're always blushing. Yeah. And the idea of native peoples as hypersexualized, which is what happens to Tiger Lily. She doesn't really talk, but she is there to dance for Peter. In a rather suggestive manner for somebody who's also supposed to be, like, 12.
And Peter is into it. Like I said before, he's giving her Eskimo kisses. Like,
and he blushes a very particular shade of red during this song.
Yeah.
And also it's interesting because Wendy tries to dance with the Lost Boys and the natives that are dancing around the fire. And she keeps being told by a woman, like, no, women don't dance. Women don't dance.
Women get the firewood.
Women get the firewood. Women don't dance. But Tiger Lily is allowed to dance for Peter. So apparently women do get to dance as long as they're dancing for the pleasure of a man. But Wendy was just dancing for the pleasure herself. So apparently that's forbidden.
To the point where she just gets frustrated and leaves. Like, Squaw, no get firewood. Squaw, go home.
Yeah,
like, just, she's not allowed to have fun, and she's also looking at the boy that she's crushing on kind of dancing with another girl and enjoying it.
Wendy's entire point in this story is to learn that she has to grow up. Peter's entire point in this story is to learn that he never does.
That ain't telling you about how society views men and women.
Yeah. But now that we've dealt with the awful sexism and the awful racism, we chose this film for a reason this month.
Yeah, let's talk about pirates.
Let's talk about the reason we actually wanted to talk about it. We've got Captain Hook and the pirates, and this wasn't the first pirate Disney pirate thing. Like I said, they made the live action Treasure Island in 1950, I believe, and this was 53. But this is the most iconic Disney pirate depiction up until Jack Sparrow.
Yeah. So, Peter, I mean, this little rivalry between Hook and Peter has been going on for a while. We don't know how long, but it's long enough that the pirates are complaining that they have forgotten how to kill people. Pirates have killed, let's be honest.
Yeah.
But you know, they forgot how to search for treasure. They pretty much forgot every stereotypical pirate thing that you can think of, and they want to go back and sail the seas again, but they're not allowed to because Hook is the captain, and he's decided to stay in Neverland because he wants to kill Peter Pan.
Yeah, this is one thing about Peter Pan here, is that as they're talking about the, you know, setting up why Hook wants to kill Peter Pan, he says, Peter Pan cut off my hand. And Smee says, oh, that was just a prank. And Hook's reaction is not the normal reaction, which would be like, what kind of psychopath thinks cutting off another person's hand is a prank?
No, he agrees with his eye. Yes,
he agrees. Yes, but throwing it to the alligator and letting the alligator eat it is too much. Or the crocodile, as they call it here. It's a freaking alligator.
But the crocodile now has the taste for Hook and wants the rest of him.
Yeah, and now follows him around, and of course, you know the thing, the clock, you know, he also swallowed a clock, and now he ticks, and that's how Hook knows when he's coming. But what an odd scene of, like, well, it was just a boyish prank to cut off your hand. Yes, but throwing it to the gator was too far.
Well, considering that, again, he is supposed to be the stereotypical pirate doing such things, since, again, the other pirates in the ship are missing the joy of killing other people, you think that a pirate, okay, stabbing someone, sure, but the fact that you took a part of my body and fed it to an animal, that's a little too far. Cutting it off in the heat of battle, sure, but why'd you have to go feed it to the animals? That's disrespectful.
It's like, what were you gonna do, Hook? Sew it back on? Like, you don't have that ability yet. I don't know, maybe there's magic.
It is Neverland, and Neverland... Pour some pixie dust on it, you'll be fine.
Yeah, pour some pixie dust on it, think good thoughts. This Hook is... he's not a lovable pirate like Jack Sparrow.
No.
He is, or any of the other pirates we've actually talked about. We've talked about lovable pirates so far.
Even John Silver is lovable on some level.
Yeah, eventually, you know, Treasure Planet, he does.
He does have some love for, he does have some love for the boy. But this is, classic Disney villain, a irredeemable POS villain, which a lot of
there people... is nothing good about Hook. Yeah.
No, he is a female dog of a human being. To a lot of people, they kind of miss that in Disney villains, because the more recent movies have seen redeemable villains like Big Hero 6, even Frozen, to an extent, having what could consider be the villain having a redeemable moment, or. Is doing what they're doing because of good intentions. Like, for example, Ralph Breaks the Internet. Ralph is the villain, but he's doing it because he doesn't want his friend to go away.
Yeah. The pirates in this are completely irredeemable. You kind of like Smee a little bit, just because he's funny.
He's the comic relief of the movie, so you're kind of supposed to like him a little bit.
But for the most part, he's not a likable guy, except that he tells Hook, why did you shoot the guy in the middle of his song and stuff? That's not good for him.
Straight up, Hook kills a man, a member of his own crew. Granted, we do not see, we see the pirate singing, we see Hook grab his gun, shoot. We don't see him shoot the guy, but we see a splash afterwards. You can put two and two together there.
Yeah, you don't really see the body, but you know that he just killed the guy for singing. And Smee says that's not good form, and Hook says, I don't care about good form. I'm a pirate. So Smee seems to be the only one that kind of thinks about honorable combat in any sort of way.
And there are some versions of Peter Pan where... Hook does have some sort of gentlemanly quality to him. Like, he is a pirate, he is a ruthless killer, but he still has good form. This one throws it out the window. Again, depending on which version you're looking at.
Yeah, this version absolutely has no sense of honor. In fact, we see it contrasted with Peter in their final battle, where he's just like, you can fly, dude. Just fly away. He is about to stab you, save yourself. And Peter says, no, I promised him I wouldn't fly.
Yeah, I'm going to have an honorable battle with him. Even though Hook is sneaking up behind him trying to stab him with the hook.
Well, yeah, that's before, though. He jumps up and wraps Hook in the flag, and then Hook gets away and tries to backstab him. And then Peter flies. It's like, oh, Hook broke the rules, so I don't feel... bound by them anymore. But Peter's not going to be the one to break the rules first, and it's kind of the one good thing I can say about Peter in this entire movie. Yeah. But this is kind of an iconic pirate portrayal, though.
Yeah.
In the classic villain sense.
Yeah, they gave Hook a very gentlemanly voice, but he is very much... ruthless and will, he kidnaps a child to get her to, kidnaps Tiger Lily to get her to talk of where the Lost Boy's location is at, and she won't talk, so she's gonna drown her. And they tell me or die, and she doesn't say a word. Okay, you're just gonna die.
Also, Peter being a coitus guy is that he defeats Hook, and then he crows, and he's like, all right, Wendy, let's get out of here. And she's like, don't you remember Tiger Lily's drowning, like, 40 feet that way? And he's like, all right, Tiger Lily. Like, he was just gonna leave her there to drown. She's so unimportant to him. He's just like, haha, I had a good battle with Hook. Time to go home now. And Wendy has to be like, do you not remember the girl drowning just to your left? Like, turn your head just slightly. Like... Hook is extremely villainous, not only in the attempts to stab Peter, but like he sends a time bomb to Peter's house.
Yeah, that is the only motion of, I guess you could say, modern technology for 1953 in this time that's supposed to be a fantasy world set around the time of World War II England or World War I England?
Well, yeah, Victorian era, so a little bit before that.
Yeah, 1900
like century.
Yeah, around there.
But yeah, this is a bit fantastical. I'm not exactly sure when the time bomb kind of came into usage, but
I believe in the original story it was poison, and then
yeah, something drank the poison. Like that. Yeah. The interesting thing is that this movie completely cuts out one of the most famous scenes and the most famous scene about Tinkerbell. Yeah, clap. Tell Tinkerbell you believe. Tell her you want to live. She'll hear you. Clap, children, clap. It completely gets rid of like the you know panto part of this. You know, the audience participation part of this.
No fourth wall breaking in this adaptation, apparently.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting because I think that would be an interesting thing if like the animated Peter Pan just turns and is like, children clap, you know. And whenever they do like a filmed version of the play, you know, like the Mary Martin kind of versions of the play, you know, Mary Martin will turn to the camera and be like, children at home, clap for Tinkerbell. And it continues to this day, you know, the most recent version of that they did. With Christopher Walken as Captain Hook, you know, they still turn to the camera and say, you know, at home, yes, we can hear you through the TV or whatever.
I like that version. The only part about that that I did see that live when it aired is the fact that they allowed Peter to swear in that one. Oh, what did Tinkerbell call me? In this version, they say, oh, they called Tinkerbell called you a silly girl. In that version, Peter says, oh, she thinks you're a dumbass.
Yeah. <it's> like
literally.
Yeah, that was pretty funny. But the interesting thing about this is that I kind of, while I love nuance in my villains, there is something to be said about a villain that just revels in it.
And not only that, but Cook is outsmarting a lot of the characters in this movie. Like, physically, obviously, he's not going to match up to this 12-year-old boy in terms of athleticism, but he does, like, the first plan, obviously, with Tiger Lily fails, but he is able to prey on Tinkerbell's jealousy, saying, all I want to do is, you know, I'll get rid of Wendy, I'll get rid of them all, I'm not going to harm Peter, I just want to get, for some reason he makes it that he's going to get rid of Wendy.
Yeah, I just don't like Wendy. I don't know why Tinkerbell is dumb enough to fall for this, because Hook has no idea who Wendy is. I mean, honestly, like, she just got there a few hours before.
Again, jealousy will do a lot for, at least for Tinkerbell.
Yeah.
She turns so red in anger that she is lighting stuff on fire just by walking through them.
Yeah. Hook is kind of slick in the way he does that, though. You know, the way he kind of plays her shows that he knows at least enough about his enemy, because Smee just says offhandedly that Peter has banished Tinkerbell for a week. And he's like, wait, when did this happen? Let's go find Tinkerbell. I can use this. And he did. And Tinkerbell, it's only after hearing about the bomb that Tinkerbell's like, oh, wait, the evil pirate lied to me. It's so weird to me that Tinkerbell has become like the great symbol of Disney and has her own like
movie series
and stuff now, because Tinkerbell in the original movie is just the worst. Maybe not as bad as Peter, but they're all just awful.
And he locks her in a lantern, and in the Peter Pan ride, you could see Tinkerbell in a lantern as she's all happy. It's like, No?
No? Yeah. Anyway, you know, we get the big battle with Hook. It's all defeated. And then Peter decides, like, oh, yeah, Wendy and John and Michael are homesick. I'm going to take them home in Captain Hook's ship.
We don't know what happens to Hook. There is a sequel that, but as far as this, as a one-off movie, we don't know what happens to Hook. We just know that
Hook
the Crocker's
is barely in front of the croc as he disappears over the horizon. That's it. It's like, you know, leave it to your imagination whether or not he gets eaten or gets away.
Whether you consider the sequels to be canon or not.
Well, I mean, it was very obvious at the time of, like, you make up your mind, kids. You know, whatever you can handle. If you want to think he died a gruesome death in the crocodile's teeth, okay. If not, then he got away and, you know, he's just embarrassed on an island somewhere.
And, yeah, finally we get Peter makes the decision he's going to take the kids home and has Tinkerbell cover the entire ship in fairy dust, which turns it gold for some reason.
It's glowing. I don't think it's supposed to be gold as in the substance. I think it's supposed to be glowing. And that's
a lot. I mean,
the best they could
render
it.
It's like this is nothing to Tink. I would have at least had a nice little gag of her being exhausted after dumping all that fairy dust.
Yeah, I don't exactly know where fairy dust comes from, but apparently it happens when you shake her. So I just, like, imagine her, like, doing a sky salsa or something, you know, like, shake, Tinkerbell, shake your butt. Anyway.
Did Peter really need to spank Tinkerbell's butt to put the fairy dust on the kids to begin with?
Yeah, she looks absolutely terrified when he goes, oh, wait, you need fairy dust to fly. And she's like, nope. I'm getting out of here.
I think it's come points of like, oh, okay, you flirting with this girl in her house, like, oh, we want to take her with us? Oh, hell no.
Yeah. Let's wrap this up. We kind of rambled and ranted our way through this, but let's wrap it up here.
Yeah. So we're back in London in the kids' house, and it seems to be even though that they were, you know, gone for however many days it was, it's only been a few hours in the real world.
Their parents are just coming home from the party.
They're letting the dog back in the house. The dad is saying, yeah, I didn't mean anything that I said. I was just being emotional. I'll apologize to the kids in the morning.
Yeah, and it's only when they find Wendy out of bed in front of an open window that they start questioning anything. And Wendy tells them the story, and the mother's like, oh, really? Like, the mother doesn't seem that surprised. And then the father is like, no, that's not true. Wait, that ship in the clouds. I've seen that ship.
Yeah, and it's in the original story, the Lost Boys did in fact stay with Wendy and decided to grow up.
But in this one, they stay with Peter, yeah.
Because, as Wendy said, they were going to, but they changed their mind the last second.
Yeah, and I think that there's something really telling in that after the novel was written, Barry came back and put, like, a little tag at the end of the book, like a little extra bit at the end of the book called When Wendy Grew Up, an Afterthought. Mm-hmm. And that's where you find out that Peter comes back years later and ends up taking Wendy's daughter. And the cycle continues.
So there's a sequel called Return to Neverland,
where they follow this bit. But we may do that one day if we run out of literally anything else to do.
One of the few Disney sequels to get a theatrical run.
Yeah. But the thing I wanted to say is I think that Barry titled that properly, because I do think that the role of women in this story is a complete afterthought to the author and to most people who do this movie. Is that theoretically we're seeing it through Wendy's eyes, but, you know, there it's nothing about kind of how it affects her other than her going like, Yes, I've taken care of enough boys. I'm ready to be a mother now. You know, I've learned how to do my womanly duty or whatever. It's like, ugh. Sorry, so, I really hate this story. I really do. And I had forgotten kind of how much I hated it until I watched this film. Because if I'm going to watch a Peter Pan movie, I watch Hook. Yeah. Let's face it, everybody in our generation watches Hook. That's our Peter Pan story.
Yeah.
I watched this as a kid, but this isn't my Peter Pan story.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what your personal relationship with the film is.
I did watch it as a kid, but yeah, I have the more emotional attachment to Hook than to this incarnation of Peter Pan.
Yeah, when I watched it for this rewatch, that was probably like the third time I'd ever seen it all the way through in my entire life. I've seen Hook like 25 times.
I had two copies of Hook as a kid because I wore out one.
Yeah, it's like that's our version. And I had forgotten how much just kind of the base story really gets to me. And I think it plays a little differently if you're watching the staged version, in which Peter Pan is always played by a woman.
Mm-hmm.
For some reason, that mitigates the sexism just slightly, because you can kind of go like, "Aw, look at the girl love." You know? There's like that kind of like overtone, at least to a modern audience, maybe. But watching it this way, oh, it just left me in a bad mood. So now we gotta ask that question that I'm dreading answering this week.
Yeah, I think I already know your answer. Does this movie still have the magic?
I want you to go first on this one.
I'm going to have to apologize, but yeah, I still kind of had a good feeling watching this movie, but it's purely from a nostalgic perspective. So I'm going to say it has the nostalgic magic. I don't know if it has the magic that stands the test of time. If you're going to show this to someone who has no idea who Peter Pan is, I don't know if they're going to have the same love for the story.
Yeah, that's kind of where I am on it. Like, I watch this movie and I see all the Disney things that I like. I see Tinkerbell, but I see Tinkerbell in the modern form where she's like a decent person.
Yeah.
You know, I see like the adorable version in the parks. I don't see this version. I see kind of Captain Hook is an archetype, but not necessarily from this movie. I thought of the Peter Pan boat ride.
Yeah.
The flying boat ride in Disney World, which I loved as a kid. I actually went back after watching the movie for the rewatch and looked at footage on YouTube of, you know, somebody doing a ride through with a camera. And boy, I forgot how, like, I guess I didn't know as a kid how, like, absolutely cheesy that ride is.
But for its time, you know, that is an original ride that opened day one with Disneyland. And for its time,
that's even before animatronics.
Yeah, they were all
they're just mannequins.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're static mannequins that don't move. They don't do anything. They're just, like, you know, plaster figures or whatever.
In the recent years, they have added, like, Peter now is turning the pirate wheel, and you see some projections of Peter flying and Peter and Hook having their little sword fight, trying to modernize the ride.
Yeah, but for the most part, it's just like scale models underneath you painted with black light reactive paint. It's a really cheesy looking ride when you watch it.
One of my favorite gags with this ride is something that actually became from from fans. So they did a remodel of the ride in the 80s for New Fantasyland, and the movie Little Mermaid had come out. And people were thinking that one of the mermaids, because she has red hair and wears seashells, that, oh, that's Ariel. And that was never the intention, because that's how the mermaid looks in this movie. It's a red-haired with seashells on her chest.
Yeah.
And they decided, well, let's have some fun, and they deliberately redesigned that redheaded mermaid to legitimately be Ariel.
Oh wow, I'm not sure if I noticed that when I went on the ride as a kid, but
I don't think that was anywhere until like the 90s or something more recent. But
yeah, you know, the last time I went would have been like 92 or 93, so it may be, but I don't know. But yeah, this I see the building blocks that Disney used later on. Mm-hmm. That is magical to me. That is nostalgic to me. But as a story, I really hope we've grown past it as a society. I kind of hope that if you showed it to kids today, they might go like, wow, it would be neat to fly, or it would be neat to sword fight. And then the rest of it, they would kind of go like, that's weird. You know?
Yeah, and there were some airings of this movie in the 90s where they completely cut out the Why is the Red Man Red scene, and I understand why it's there on Disney Plus. You want to have these movies as they were when they were first released.
Yeah, preserved in their kind of original state.
For better or worse, yeah.
Yeah, and I'm not necessarily for deleting things. I want them put in their proper context, but... Yeah, I'm not sure if I were a parent if I would want to show this to my kid until they were older. I might show this to a teenager that would kind of understand this is what it was like in the 50s. Yeah.
This definitely needs a warning on Disney Plus for outdated cultural references. And there are other versions of Peter Pan out there that handle it better. Not necessarily Hook, but there are other versions out there that are more appropriate. Not necessarily more appropriate, but handles the native characters more respectfully than even the original text does.
Yeah. This is not one that I really ever want to watch again, to be honest. I might watch a scene here or there, but as a movie... This might be my final watch of this movie for the rest of my life. I think I'm done with it.
Peter can stay in Neverland, apparently.
Yeah. You know, make up your own mind. And honestly, if you have small children and you have shown them this, please let me know what their reaction was. I'd love to know. Like, just drop that on Facebook or whatever, because this is fascinating to me.
Let's put Peter Pan in the nostalgia pile, because that's kind of where it goes. This, as much as I did enjoy rewatching this, I can't see this being a first time watch being, oh, this is amazing.
Yeah.
It will always be a classic, and you can't deny that, but they did much better films before and since.
Indeed.
So let's move on to next week, as we will wrap up Talk Like a Pirate Month with we are going back to Treasure Island.
Back to Treasure Island? What could be there for us? We've already seen the planet.
Yeah, we've already seen Treasure Planet, but we're going to Treasure Island. We're going to Muppet Treasure Island. We're going to talk about the Muppets again.
More Muppets!
Everything is better with Muppets.
Everything is better with Muppets.
And Tim Curry. Yes, so...
I'm in my happy place now.
Muppets and Tim Curry.
Muppets and Tim Curry. It's all I need.
So yeah, join us again next week for Muppet Treasure Island.
Special thanks to Tom Smith for allowing us to use his song, Talk Like a Pirate Day, for this month's episodes. Check out his website at tomsmithonline.com.
And we will talk to you all later. Bye!
Bye!
Thank you for listening to Rewatching the Magic. We invite you to keep the magic going by joining the conversation online. Find us on Facebook at Rewatching the Magic, on Twitter at RewatchTheMagic, and of course, find all new episodes at rewatchingthemagic.podbean.com. Until next time, remember, the magic is for everyone. It only stops if you let it.